Over 100 people were murdered in Russia on Friday, including women and children. 11 terrorists were captured by Russian authorities as they attempted to cross the border into Ukraine. They are being interrogated, and all roads lead to the U.S. State Department, who have been directing Ukrainian forces since their 2014 coup. The attack occurred on March 22nd, or 322. 322 is the mysterious number used by Yale's infamous Skull and Bone Society. The official story is that 322 symbolizes the year 322 BC to memorialize the event seen as the turning point which transformed Athens from a democracy to a plutocracy. A plutocracy is a society that is ruled by no other political philosophy other than the financial elite being in control of the people's destiny. The Skull and Bones is a grooming academy for the CIA, such as former director of the CIA, George Bush, and 322 is their calling card. During the Tucker Carlson interview, President Putin was clearly speaking to the CIA. The CIA responded in a New York Times article admitting that they are using Ukraine as a proxy to wage war against Russia. Weeks before the attack, Victoria Nuland repeatedly boasted that Putin was in for a nasty surprise.
Mr. Putin's going to get some nice surprises on the battlefield, and that Ukraine will make some very strong success this year.
This supplemental funding will ensure Putin faces some nasty surprises on the battlefield this year.
On March 7th, the U.S. Embassy issued a warning about the threat of terrorist attacks in Moscow, specifying concerts. The British Embassy in Moscow mirrored this warning. Days before the attack, Barack Obama paid an unexpected visit to the British Prime Minister at 10 Downing Street.
President Obama, are you worried that Putin will rule forever? President Obama, why should we care about democracy in Russia?
Do you have a few moments?
Will you speak to us? Come and have a chat with us for a minute.
How did it go? What did you talk about?
Within hours of the attack, and without any evidence, the U.S. government blames the attack on the Islamic State and says that Ukraine is not involved. The very next day, while Russians were grieving, CIA mouthpiece The Washington Post gloated how the U.S. had prior knowledge of the attack and people still died. It has been noted that the terrorists were either professional assassins or trained by Western forces, for they were demonstrating NATO training methods such as shooting in small bursts, trigger control, and proper mag reloads. For anyone with eyes to see, this is the modus operandi of the West. Al-Qaeda was famously created by Western intelligence agencies to fight the Russians in Afghanistan and has been cultivated by the U.S. government and used as a catalyst for illegal wars and tyrannical laws against U.S. citizens. Ukraine's spy chief said 3 months ago, expect more attacks deep inside of Russia.
I'm very glad to see this. Yeah. That's my reaction.
That's your reaction. You're happy to see it.
Yeah.
Do you think there'll be more?
I think so.
Inside Russia? Deep inside Russia?
Deeper and deeper.
Dmitry Medvedev said that everyone is asking him what to do. He answered that those who were caught need to be killed, but it's much more important to kill everyone involved, everyone who paid, who sympathized, and who helped. Kill them all. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
All right, folks, that's the latest from Greg Reese. Terrorist attack on Russia has USA fingerprints all over it. And we've got some updates to that that we'll get to here in the first segment. We'll show you some statements from Putin that seem to reflect exactly what you just saw from Greg Reese. They seem to think it was the West and America. Wonder what comes next, folks. Big show today. Stay with us. It's AmericanJournalInfoWars.com. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. The collapse. The collapse of America. The collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore Harbor. Holding like a deck of cards, like a house of cards. Absolutely incredible imagery. That'll be one of our top stories today. What the heck happened here? What exactly happened here? You see a giant boat crash into the bridge and the whole thing just folds. Absolutely insane. That, of course, will be one of our main stories. Welcome to the American Journal. We have a lot to talk about today. Just a heck of a lot. More coming in by the second. That the rest of our daily. Let's get into it. Here it is, your daily dispatch, folks. All right, here it is, your daily dispatch for Tuesday, the 26th of March, 2024. Port of Baltimore paralyzed after container ship strike collapses bridge. The video that we just saw there happened last night in the morning. The harbor looks absolutely devastated. We play clip number four here. The aftermath. A massive container ship chartered by Maersk and moving outbound from the Port of Baltimore struck Francis Scott Key Bridge around 1:30 in the morning. The bridge collapse has paralyzed a large swath of the largest inland port on the East Coast. The port is ranked 9th for total dollar value of cargo and 13th for cargo tonnage among U.S. ports. Governor Wes Moore released a statement on the collapse, declaring a state of emergency in Maryland, saying, "My office is in close communication with the U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. Baltimore Department as emergency personnel are on the scene following the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. I have declared a state of emergency here in Maryland, and we are working with an interagency team to quickly deploy federal resources from the Biden administration. We are thankful for the brave men and women who are carrying on this work." What exactly happened? Well, we don't really have any answers quite yet. All we know is that the Port of Baltimore is essentially completely shut down for now. It was the Singapore flag cargo ship Dolly that slammed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Bloomberg notes the ship was chartered by Maersk. And of course, that was the same company that got their ship wedged in the Suez Canal last year, or a few years ago, rather. The bridge spans the Patapsco River and carries estimated 1.11 million vehicles annually. In this collapse, the only shipping lane in and out of the port was severed. This had massive impacts on shipping around the world. We'll get back into that in just a second. Speculation abounds as to how this exactly happened. There is some evidence from the video, as you see the ship power blinking on and off, whether they lost control of the ship. Maybe it was hacked. Maybe it was hacked. Maybe this was a cyber attack. Maybe this was the start of a wide-ranging attack against American infrastructure. We don't know, but we will try to get to the bottom of it here in just a second. I believe there were only two injuries in the entire bridge collapse. I haven't seen much of only two recovered. Okay. Yeah, there's not a lot of information. Okay, at least 20 people and several vehicles fell into the river. I was going to say it was completely sudden and, yeah, sort of terrifying. Can't imagine being on a bridge when it collapses like that, but we'll get back to it. Meanwhile, Chicago veterinarian and dog show judge charged with child porn. FBI said he boasted of drugging and abusing multiple kids. And yeah, we'll have to get right back into this one. Adam Stanford King, a veterinarian ophthalmologist from Elburn, is charged with one count of knowingly distributing child pornography. He is a staff ophthalmologist at MedVet Chicago, a veterinary clinic in Avondale. But he is somewhat famous because he is a dog show judge, travels to dog shows around the country, and has been scheduled to serve as a judge for the 2024 Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show. Yeah, we'll have to get back into that. He was drugging kids, and he also was looking to hire a surrogate to have a child all of his own. Sorry, folks. Good morning. Sorry, I have to bring you this news so early. But it's America 2024, and this is just the way things are. Meanwhile, UN Security Council passes Gaza ceasefire resolution with the U.S. not vetoing. We, of course, broke this news with Simon from Florida yesterday. As soon as it happened, we'll get into the outcome of this and what Israel's response has been. essentially to say that they're going to continue the genocide regardless. They're going to ramp it up now. How dare you question our genocide? Now it's going to get worse. Love having allies like that. Meanwhile, Ron DeSantis signs law banning Florida kids under 14 from social media and restricts access for under 16s. Ron DeSantis approved legislation Monday prohibiting minors under the age of 14 from using social media and mandating 14 and 15-year-olds obtain parental consent before logging on. And that'll definitely work. If I know one thing about kids, it's that putting age restrictions on electronic devices stops them using them entirely. That's going to completely work really well, I bet. Yeah, we'll get into how exactly that's going to be pulled off here in just a little bit. Some possibly good news here. Assange extradition on hold until U.S. gives more assurances. The High Court in London ruled on Tuesday that Julian Assange, the embattled WikiLeaks founder, cannot be immediately extradited to the United States, saying American authorities must offer assurances about his treatment first, including over his First Amendment rights and protection from the death penalty. Basically, they won't extradite people who face the death penalty, which he may very well hear in America, because, of course, you know, he deserves death for revealing the war crimes that we committed. This is the way it works. The people who committed the war crimes, not going to be charged. People who ordered the war crimes, they're living in palaces on Bahamian islands. The person who revealed the war crimes may very well be killed by the state for revealing what they're up to. More on that later. Finally, we have this. Trump's net worth reportedly soars to $6.5 billion after stock jumps. Trump's net worth in recent days has shot up by more than $4 billion, bringing his current total to about $6.5 billion, according to Bloomberg, which tracks the 500 wealthiest people in the world. Folks, if you think... All right, we'll get back to that later. I'll just let you know, when they say they track the 500 wealthiest people in the world, the ones they're not including are the thousands of people whose bank accounts vastly outnumber the supposedly richest people in the world, but never appear on any lists ever. Trump's social media company, known as Trump Media and Technology Group, completed a merger with a shell company known as DWAC. New York appeals dramatically lowered the well, that's a different story. Trump went public, and it has been an absolute bonanza. He's more than doubled his wealth. With this one move, Trump owns nearly 80 million shares, roughly 58% of Trump Media, which operates a social media site, Truth Social. At DWAC's closing price of $49.95 a share, Trump's stock was worth $4 billion on paper. He's just an incredible dude. And I mean, no matter what you say, the man has summoned billions of dollars from thin air. Because he got kicked off of Twitter. He got kicked off of Twitter, and what he did from that experience was more than double his billion-dollar fortune. It's like, this dude, he is a king amongst men. It really is. It really is incredible to see. So that's it. That's your Daily Dispatch. Today's Daily Dispatch was brought to you by Survival Shield X3, now on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. It's tri-iodine. You know, I was thinking about it today. In a lot of ways, God or humanity or the combination of the two have a way of making up for what we lose through progress. And I was thinking about this for a while because, you know, the idea of birth rates collapsing, not that big of a deal when it is offset by advances in healthcare technology, right? Advances in IVF technology. Like if the modern world and the things that are necessary to create the modern world, like plastics and, you know, new advancements in agricultural technology, if those things lead to a collapse in the birth rate, they're offset a little bit by the fact that those advancements allow us to live longer, allow the children that we do have to make it through childhood and actually become adults. So you've got, like, in the past, you'd have 6 kids and 3 of them would make it to adulthood. Because of the lack of medical technology, you know, fast forward, now you only have 3 kids, but all 3 of them survived adulthood. So you're like, you're kind of balanced out. The problem is that then those technologies that improve, extend, and allow people to survive childhood, go to places that don't have the offsetting effect of the plastics in the water and everything. So you get an off balance, or you have, you know, the collapse in birth rates combined with people just not wanting to have kids, and it becomes untenable. But there's always like a balance. And so I was thinking about that with iodine, in the fact that it used to not matter that people like didn't know about iodine because you just got it naturally. You didn't have to figure out how to synthesize iodine or gather iodine from deep earth crystals or sea iodine from the seaweed extracts. You didn't have to do any of that because you were just getting iodine naturally. But as the soil is denuded of its nutrients, and as the food that we're growing doesn't have the iodine that was naturally present in it, then you have to supplement it. You have to make up for it. You have to counterbalance the effects of modernity with other effects of modernity. So because we don't have iodine in the soil, because it's not naturally present in our foods, then you have to be supplementing. The good news is that, you know, it's sort of the double-edged sword. Yes, in the modern age, we have denuded our soil and aren't getting the supplements that we need, but we also have the technology necessary to extract the nutrients from other sources and make up for the lack of nutrients in our soil. So we're using modernity to fight the negative effects of modernity, sort of the InfoWars way. Hope you get what I mean by all of that. Obviously, it's not a good thing that our birth rates are collapsing, but it does seem like a not that big of a deal when combined with the technology that we have. But anyway, there's always a balancing act. It's when that balancing act is thrown out of whack that things get bad, and things are bad. Things are bad everywhere. It's all crazy today. I mean, we have a lot of videos to get to. And I guess we'll get to this Baltimore bridge again. I mean, this collapse is just, I just keep watching the video. It's really something else. Like, it's really incredible. I'm not sure what to think about this. It's the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore Harbor. Almost symbolic, right, that it's the guy who wrote the Declaration of Independence, as well as a bunch of other stuff. I mean, he was a very prolific writer and thinker. And, of course, sort of symbolic of America itself. He wrote the national anthem. And in a symbolic way, we're watching the literal collapse of America and the physical collapse, the spiritual collapse, the mental and moral collapse. It's all collapsing, folks. And this is just a metaphor for how we're doing overall. Again, lots of speculation about this, not a lot of answers so far. But from the video, we can see that something is happening with the container ship. It was a massive container ship. The bridge itself was 1.6 miles long, and it all just folded literally like a house of cards. I mean, it really is incredible. So yeah, mass casualty has been declared after a large container ship collides with Key Bridge, causing a complete collapse. Numerous agencies, including the Coast Guard and Fire Department, declared the mass casualty event. Crosses the Patapsco River and reportedly collapsed within a few minutes after being struck by a large container ship. It's absolutely devastating, devastating in multiple ways. Obviously, this shuts off Baltimore Harbor from ship traffic, but obviously it also stops the car traffic from being able to cross Baltimore Harbor. Yeah, look at that. I mean, the whole thing just disappears into the water. It is pretty wild. And then this is the scene this morning of the total collapse. So how did this happen? And how has it not happened before? I mean, it seems like not that crazy of an event when you've got thousands of ships passing under a bridge. How do they all miss? And this one just slams right into it. Some people are suggesting that it could have been a cyber attack of some sort, that the ship itself could have been hijacked remotely. There did appear to be some sort of electric issue on the ship. As you can see, the lights sort of blinking on and off just before, like lights of the whole ship blinking on and off just before it hits the bridge. 1.5 million vehicles annually pass over that bridge, and the shipping lane is, of course, the only one in and out of Baltimore Harbor. which, as we said, was number 9 in terms of traffic and sheer cargo volume. It is the most inland port on the East Coast and is connected to the I-95 highway network. With no commercial vehicles sailing in and out of the port anytime soon, it's a catastrophic for port operations and could spark supply chain snarls in the mid-Atlantic and Northeast. We suspect inbound vehicles are rerouting sales this morning. The bridge collapse has severed these major marine terminals. It's unknown when operations will be restored. According to Maryland's government's website, the Port of Baltimore handled over 52 million tons of international cargo, valued at more than $80 billion last year, ranking it as the 9th busiest port in the United States. The data shows the port handled 847,158 autos and light trucks in 2023, the most of any U.S. port. The port also handles farm and construction machinery, sugar, gypsum, and coal. The port supports 15,330 direct jobs and 139,000 jobs in Maryland, according to Maryland's government website. Again, this is developing. We'll bring any updates as we get it. But you can see from the video, something's happening with the ship. We aren't sure exactly what, but hugely devastating for the economy of Baltimore. Baltimore's not doing so hot. It's not doing so great. It was one of the cities of the world in like the 20s. But nowadays, well, you're lucky if you don't just get shot. But of course, the Inner Harbor is a major tourism zone as well. Also have a very cool wooden ship there you can go visit if you're interested. But again, we don't know. I mean, we don't know whether this was pilot error. Obviously, this video we're seeing is foggy, but at the time, it didn't seem very foggy. It wasn't a natural event. And really, what's shocking to me is just the size. Every time you see a container ship, it's just sort of mind-boggling. Like when you see it from far away, it just looks like a little toy. And you realize every one of those little boxes on there is a gigantic container that could house a family of 6 comfortably. Just the absolute size of these cargo ships is pretty mind-blowing. There you go, taking out the bridge. Yeah. Pretty iconic, I think. An icon of modern-day America. I wonder where Baltimore is going to get the engineers and architects they need to fix this, considering the fact that nobody in Baltimore schools can do math. That might be an issue. We might be destroying things we have no capability of rebuilding ever again. This is the downfall of America in the real time. But we'll move on now, and we do have some more stories on that printing, I know, and we'll talk again about some of the speculation as to what was behind this, or is it just an occurrence, just one of these occurrences, you know? You put a gay guy in charge of transportation, suddenly everything stops running right. It's weird, isn't it? Isn't that so weird? In fact, we can go to clip number 14 here. As we had an extremely close call yet again, maybe the 100th this year, at an airport. This time it was LaGuardia Airport in New York. A Southwest Boeing 737 almost collided with the control tower. And you can hear the frantic interchange here. Clip number 14, this LaGuardia Airport, Boeing 737 barreling towards the control tower. Let's watch.
American 1263, runway 13, line up and wait.
It deviates on the final approach and east coming dangerously
right,
close to the tower.
Right, heading, climb, maintain 2,000. Climb, maintain 2,000. 2,000.
Climb, maintain 2,000. That's 147.
Continue climbing. That's 147. And when able to say a reason why you were, not on the approach.
Regret 574, 184 RVR, 3,500, contact tower 18.7. We're unable that. We're 4,000 is the best we can do. 784, cancel approach clearance.
And what were the reasons for the 2 go-arounds?
That was not aligned with the runway at all. He was, east of the final. He was not going to land the runway.
Center Southwest 147, 2,000 feet, heading 060.
Yeah, kind of troubling. Kind of incredibly scary. Saying, go around, go up. So onemileatatime.com has a story. A Southwest 737 scary off-course LaGuardia go-around. Go-arounds whereby pilots abort a landing, typically on final approach, are routine maneuvers and typically very safe. Well, they were before. They were before. I get the feeling that there's maybe a bit of diversity at play here from the control tower. You can, like, tell me, like, why you almost hit us with a plane? Like, what the heck, man? one of the great things about things like, communication on the airwaves, you know, talking to the control tower or the plane, it's all very exact, very precise. It's all very formulaic. Like, there's a reason we have, it's almost a form of etiquette. It is a form of etiquette, I guess, where you just know how to say things and what to do at any particular time. This idea of just like common courtesy and etiquette and not adding filler words to your statements. It's emblematic to me of just the overall collapse that we're experiencing in America. And you can't run complicated systems when the control tower is like, all right, like, go around, I don't know, go up a little bit, I guess. If you could tell me, like, why you were doing that, that would be, it's, everything's supposed to be very exact, very precise, very concise, very just like 29 or 455, approaching at 200 feet at 35 miles an hour. It's all just supposed to be very exact and scientific and militaristic almost. But, that requires, like, discrimination. Like, you have to say some things are good and some things are bad and, like, there's appropriate way to do things. And, we're sort of getting over that idea. There's no appropriate way to do things anymore. There's no, like, insistence on sticking to the rules and the way things are. Everything's just kind of up in the air. Which means our planes might not stay up in the air. Here, we'll finish up here with the coverage of this 737 go-around that we just heard the audio from. OneMileAtATime.com has a pretty thorough breakdown of it. On Saturday, March 23rd, 2024, the New York area saw absolutely awful weather with strong winds and limited visibility. New York LaGuardia Airport is one of the more challenging airports in the United States to land on a nice day, let alone when weather gets bad. The incident involved a Southwest flight WN-147 flying from Nashville to New York LaGuardia. It was operated by a roughly six-year-old Boeing 737-800, but it didn't appear to be a problem with the plane itself this time. So it was cleared to land on runway 4, but then performs a go-around, with the reason being that they were too fast, too high with the tailwind. So a go-around is when you abort a landing, essentially, when there's some sort of weather issue or something, and you just pull up and go around and try to land in a different way. So flight 147 swung back around for another approach. A JetBlue aircraft right in front of the Southwest performed a go-around, the reason being wind shear. As flight 147 made its final approach, the aircraft goes off course, flying east of the runway, and reportedly gets dangerously close to the air traffic control tower. As the plane approaches the airport off course, an air traffic controller yells, go around," and the plane climbs to 2,000 feet, which is kind of wild. According to flight tracking data, the plane was at an altitude of just 200 feet while being completely off course for the runway. At this point, the air traffic controller says, "Say the reason that you were, like, not on the approach." When asked about the reason for the go-around, the air traffic controller says it was not aligned with the runway at all. It was, like, east of the final. He was not going to end up on the runway. After the incident, the Southwest pilots sound rather shaken up, as you can hear from the voices of both pilots trembling. It's also interesting how the pilot communicating changes after that second go-around. So I'm guessing the captain was initially the pilot monitoring, but became the pilot flying after that go-around. So maybe almost a training mission. You had the co-pilot taking the controls. So you hear the voices of who is speaking as commander of the plane change after that initial go-around. At this point, the pilots state that their intention was to divert to Pittsburgh, although the plane ended up diverting to Baltimore BWI. And this author says, I think we can all agree this is one of the more unusual go-around situations. It was a crappy day at LaGuardia, and there were many go-arounds. However, the fact that a 737 was at an altitude of 200 feet while being completely off course is alarming, to put simply. Perhaps what's more concerning is that the air traffic controller had to call the go-around, as the pilot seemingly didn't think anything was wrong. The aircraft was an ILS, instrument landing system, approach for runway 4. The airport's procedures require that it be hand-flown with autopilot turned off. Admittedly, conditions were very challenging that day with strong winds and limited visibility, but still, in those circumstances, one would think you'd initiate a go-around prior to being 200 feet up, nowhere close to the runway. So I guess what they're saying is that if the control tower didn't initiate the go-around and command that the plane, you know, rise to 2,000 feet, they would have just tried to land but not been on the runway. So that's horrifying, to say the least. They say, hopefully this incident gets investigated. It's much more serious than any of the recent incidents that have gotten a lot of media attention, focusing on the 737 MAX or United Airlines. I think just for all of our safety, we need every control tower to be live streaming the runways at all times. So many of these events happen. The reason it's not getting more media attention is because the door didn't fly off mid-flight, and there aren't pictures of a gaping hole in the fuselage from the people sitting in the plane. If you don't have video of the event, did it even happen? I think we need live streaming video, just recording every runway in America at all times, because one of these times it's not going to work out so prettily, and we're going to want to see evidence of it. LaGuardia saw some awful weather on Saturday, but this particular go-around whereby the plane descended to an altitude of around 200 feet while being nowhere near the runway centerline is, yeah, absolutely horrifying. And we got a lot of pilots commenting on this. One person says, well, the influence of DEI cannot be ruled out here. It was, apparently, a pilot error. I wonder who that pilot was. They say, is the FAA investigating the United return to gate? Then if not, it doesn't matter what the media reports. The media for weeks kept hyping the Boeing component of UA's safety issues, and any reasonable, intelligent industry observer could see that nearly all the issues had airline connections. This incident should be investigated and should have been regardless of the airline. Does that mean that even if there was no finding of pilot error, likely that there are systemic issues at Southwest just because of one incident? No, the FAA is investigating UA's operations, United Airlines operations, because of the string of pilot-related incidents that actually go back a year. And let's remember that those included a couple of hard landings with aircraft damage, low-altitude flaps issue that took a 777 dangerously close to the Pacific Ocean, and a plane ending up in the grass. Those are just a few of the UA incidents. It doesn't even include maintenance issues. Again, saying that this was so much worse and so should be investigated, why is Airline X being investigated, is completely wrong mindset. All of these incidents should be investigated and usually are. Returning to the gate is routine and not an erosion to safety and likely not investigated. If the FAA senses too many incidents in too short a period of time, they will look for common threads, and that is what they're doing at United. The repercussions for United remain to be seen, but the message seems clear that United's growth was too much, too fast, and they will be forced to slow down, which is the antithesis of what UA execs have been wanting to do. Again, just pointing to the fact that this has been a continual string of near disasters, and the FAA actually held an emergency meeting last year to deal with some of these, but obviously they didn't do enough because we're still having all of these issues, and they're only getting worse. So there you go. Sorry if you liked living in a country where you could trust the infrastructure, but driving on bridges, flying on airplanes, these are privileges of a first world nation. If we aren't a first world nation anymore, nothing is certain, nothing is safe, nothing can be maintained by the people that didn't build it when the people that did build it are demonized, ostracized, and kept out of positions where they can actually help. Just incredible. Again, we're going to get into more censorship in just a second, but another story here shows the futility of the way things are done in the modern age. And there have been a couple of these stories recently. They were all in our climate change pitch meeting skit. I remind you that everything in the climate change pitch meeting skit was, in fact, a real headline. Not something I made up. So there was another story going around about Scotland's windmill farms being powered by diesel engines. Just what? Okay, crazy. You've got these big windmills, and you have diesel engines spinning them around, which seems counterproductive, if you ask me. But that was one of the stories that was going around recently. Again, not one I made up. Similarly, I didn't make up the idea that, you know, there's a series of lines in that where it's like, what about windmills? Windmills are great unless there's too much wind. What about solar panels? Those are great unless there's too much sun. Also, not a joke, not something that I made up. There actually can be too much sun on solar panels and they start to crack and break and no longer function. That's one of the dangers of solar panels. The other is hail and rain. I believe we have a video of this, clip number one here. And yet another massive L for green energy boondoggles. A massive swath of solar panels in Damon, Texas, were taken out by a hailstorm. Not only were the expensive panels rendered useless by the weather, but now they're leaking a toxic compound, cadmium telluride, into the water. So not only do Texans get intermittent energy instead of constant energy, not only do we waste thousands of acres of land with solar farms, but now the pointless panels are leaking into the groundwater. Just insane. Texas hailstorm hammers Fighting Jay's solar farm, prompting concerns of leaking chemicals into groundwater used by the neighbors. So yeah, solar panels are great. They just, can't be outside. So I guess that's a problem. Be right back, folks. Don't go anywhere. Move on from this story, but it's just one of those things. The hailstorm we experienced Saturday morning was unimaginable, Kaminsky recalled. We've never seen anything like it in our lifetime. Hailstorms in Texas? Who would have thought? Large farm panels, solar panels, are made of cadmium telluride. Cadmium telluride is found in some solar panels. It's a toxic substance that can cause kidney, heart, skin, and lung issues. Although a hazmat team has found no contamination from the destroyed solar panels there in Damon, Texas. But yet another example of the boondoggle that is green energy. Now every advance we seem to make has embedded in it poison, literal poison. Now, I want to talk about censorship because there's a lot of very interesting developments in that regard. And I want to also look back at the story that we touched on yesterday of Kate Middleton, because they had a very interesting way of framing things in that article. And we'll get to that in just a second. But And it all ties into the excuses for censorship. But let's just go through this stack real quick. From the Daily Wire, DOJ launches National Resource Center to aid authorities in taking firearms from people deemed a threat to themselves or others. Now, it's obviously a Second Amendment issue, but it's also a free speech issue, as, of course, what's going to happen if people think their guns are going to be taken away if they, go to get medical help for a mental health issue or something like that. Attorney General Merrick Garland said in a Saturday press release that the new National Resource Center will provide our partners across the country with valuable resources to keep firearms out of the hands of individuals who pose a threat to themselves or others. Extreme risk protection orders, commonly referred to as red flag laws, allow authorities to confiscate firearms from a person whom a court deems to be a risk to himself or others. ERPOs, red laws, red flag laws, also prevent a person from buying or possessing a gun for the duration of the order. The establishment of the center is the latest example of the Justice Department's work to use every tool provided by the landmark bipartisan Safer Communities Act to protect communities from gun violence. The Resource Center, which launched with a new website, is described as a resource for implementers that will provide training and technical assistance to law enforcement officials, prosecutors, attorneys, judges, clinicians, victim services, and social service providers, community organizers, and behavioral health professionals responsible for implementing laws designed to keep guns out of the hands of the people who pose a threat to themselves or others. Community organizations, mental health behavioral health professionals. not going down a good road, not going down a road conducive to human liberty. More restrictions. And of course, it's all absurd, because if you want to actually go after the people that actually use their guns for actually dangerous things, it's not usually the people that are going to behavioral specialists or, you know, telegraphing their intent long beforehand. There's a story we had yesterday. I don't think we went to the video, but there's something like 40, I think it was 30 people were arrested in New York subways. Each one of them had an average of 48 crimes under their belt, meaning that those 30 people were responsible for literally thousands of crimes carried out in New York subways, just the ones they were caught for, by the way. Thousands, literally thousands. So the truth is that the vast majority of crime in America is committed by a very, very small portion of the population. They're not the population that's going to behavioral specialists. It's not the percentage of the population that is going to be affected by red flag laws. It's the percentage of the population that gets their guns illegally anyway and is routinely let out to commit more crimes by the bail reform and reimagining justice laws. You know, if you want to picture what reimagining justice looks like, well, let's just say a container ship just reimagined the bridge across Baltimore Harbor. The Francis Scott Key Bridge has been reimagined by a container ship in the same way that the justice system has been reimagined by socialist actors and Soros-funded activists around the nation. But let's continue. Regime suppresses credit card donations to VDare.com, but you can still give and buy live stream tickets to conference by e-check. VDare.com just received very bad news. The heroic team at Gab Pay, which briefly restored our ability to accept credit card donations after we were canceled by our long-term payment processor Stripe, has reported that a second bank has refused to work with them on our behalf. In this case, we know for certain that it is the banks, not the payment processor, who are canceling us, and we have reason to believe that the banks themselves are under pressure from federal regulators to stamp out wrongthink on immigration up to in the run-up to the 2024 election. So again, VDare is an incredibly good media outlet, very dissident, very right-wing, very anti-immigration. And so, of course, the banks are collaborating and probably with pressure from federal regulators, denying them the ability to receive support from their viewers, listeners, and readers. They were able to, you know, take credit card funds with Gab Pay, but now that's been shut off. As again, this is happening at an industry-wide level. They have not been able to tie in purchases of live stream tickets to the sold-out April 26th to 28th conference at Berkeley Springs, West Virginia headquarters, but they're going to, they're just having to basically, what's the word for it? Ghetto tech? I can't say the real word. They say, for now, we're going to assume that any charge of $99.99 through our donation page is intended to purchase a live stream ticket. So you can't buy live stream tickets, but if you donate $99.99, they'll send you a ticket because they assume that's what you're doing for, you know, what you're doing it for. It's just, you know, another data point in the worldwide shutdown of free speech. If you oppose the mainstream narrative, if you speak out against what's happening to this country and around the world, the banks will shut you down. The payment processors will shut you down. The feds will surveil you and use whatever methods deemed necessary to shut you down. I think Letitia James is even going after VDare as well. They're being attacked just like InfoWars has been attacked over the last several years. Not because they're wrong, not because they're actually spreading hate or anything like that. Even if they were, that's not an excuse to shut them down. But by telling people the facts that the mainstream doesn't want you to hear, see, when they live in a world that is composed entirely of ridiculous lies, well, your lies destroy their whole, you're telling the truth, destroys the whole construct that they exist in. So you can't have the truth being told and you have to shut it down, whether that's getting banks to do it or fabricating legal processes to destroy the ability of the information from getting out. It doesn't matter what the intent of these laws or, you know, reasoning behind the debanking is anymore. They're just going to do it. It's very upsetting. So I do hope you support V. Dare and Peter Brimelow, his wife, Lydia Brimelow, and all the others over at V. Dare. As again, in any normal American, actually American construct, this would be unimaginable. But this is where we are now, and we need to recognize that. And we need to do what we can to fight back against it and go out of our way to support the people that the establishment is very obviously trying to destroy. But it goes on, EU to start fining platforms up to 6% of global revenue if they fail to censor election, quote, disinformation under a new censorship law. The EU is about to start punishing online platforms for not tackling, quote, election disinformation to the bloc's satisfaction. In order to make good on the threat, the EU is putting to use its censorship law, the Digital Services Act. Commissioner for Internal Market Thierry Breton is quoted as saying that platforms like X, TikTok, Snapchat, YouTube, and Facebook, but also search engines, must operate according to the guidelines that are currently being drafted. So this is just another global trend that, like, it's not going to stop unless we stop them. Slowly but surely, they're chipping away at the very concept of free speech. And as they put various pieces into place, soon we'll wake up to find that anything they deem verboten will be unspeakable. You will not be able to question the election. You won't be able to question hormones for children. You won't be able to question the vaccine or even mock obviously fake stories. We'll get into that in just a second. A French woman is facing 7 years in prison for mocking the completely made up, utterly debunked, and thoroughly ridiculous story about babies being baked in ovens by Hamas. It's not true, but you're not allowed to joke at it about it, or you might go to jail for 7 years. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal, Infowars.com, band.video. We're going to open up the phone lines for your calls in just a little bit. Maybe we'll do a space. I'm not sure which one we will do yet. But I want to keep talking about censorship, as it is, of course, a theme. It's been going on for a while, but really has ramped up in the last few months. And as some of you know, I've started doing a weekly live stream at night called Moonbase Live with Lebanon John. We're doing a special broadcast this Wednesday. We're going to do a quarterly report, and I was compiling stories for that quarterly report. And of course, there's like three categories of stories. There's stories that are major, singular events, just big stories. Things like the Tucker Carlson Putin interview. That was just like a big story from the last 3 months. Then you've got stories that should be big and don't get enough attention, didn't get enough attention, sort of passed unremarked, but are hugely important, even if they don't, you know, get a ton of eyes on it. And then there's a third category, which are trends. It's little stories that by themselves aren't particularly noteworthy, but when they're repeated over and over, it becomes a story, right? A plane having a wheel fall off in San Francisco, not one of the top news stories of the year, right? But when you have it every day, there's a little issue with an airplane. Suddenly, that's the story. That becomes the story. And so I was trying to compile all of these. Of course, it's just a ridiculous number of stories, just, again, from 3 months. It's like I try really hard to be discriminating and not just include every story. But when it comes to colluding and undermining and subverting the American Republic, the censorship laws in particular, it's like a combination. It's like you've got censorship and then you've got collusion and coordination between the ruling regime and the mainstream media. That's combined with big tech and the way that's being manipulated, which is also associated with AI. But what you see as you start to track all of these is that we're just really rapidly moving towards just complete, like, you want to talk about empire of lies. Everything is a lie at this point. Everything that the mainstream media believes is a lie. Not like they believe a couple big lies, like 100% of what they believe is false. It's hard to describe. And so we'll continue through this stack here just to, again, give you an idea just from today. These are stories just from today. EU is going to start fining platforms up to 6% of global revenue if they fail to censor election disinformation under new censorship law. Again, this is censorship. I know that the Supreme Court diversity hire had a hard time understanding how getting a company to censor, like when the government gets a company to censor, that's still censorship. It's not a private company doing that. And it is, in fact, forbidden by the First Amendment. The EU has less stringent free speech laws, but there is some aspect of free speech in their constitutions. But they're outsourcing it to the social media companies and saying, look, you just go ahead and censor. And if you don't censor correctly, we're going to fine you billions upon billions of dollars. We're going to take, you know, a 20th of your entire revenue for the year if you don't censor to our satisfaction. So you handle it, right? You censor what you think is right and good, and if you don't censor what we want you to, we'll take a 20th of your earnings this year. So it's not like they're going in and individually telling people what to censor, although they are certainly doing that. But in this regard, it's more of just a better safe than sorry. Just censor. You probably want to censor more than necessary, because if you censor less than necessary, well, we're going to steal billions of dollars from you. So outsourcing that to the big tech media companies. We'll get back to how censorship is destroying democracy worldwide on the other side. You know, obviously censorship is key to everything they're trying to do, because they are creating a world of lies. Their concepts require lies, because nothing that they do or propose make any sense in reality. You have to create a world of lies in order to justify your insane policy decisions. Just to go over, just the first few months started out in January with the European Commission president claiming disinformation, the world's gravest threat of 2024, not terrorism, not war, not World War III, not Gaza or Ukraine or Taiwan, not illegal immigration, not the crime wave spike that continues, even though there are stats now coming out going, actually, the crime wave is sort of tamped down. It's not as bad as it was before. Crime is actually being reduced. The reality is it's gotten so bad that crimes are just not being counted anymore. They're just not being reported anymore. So you have like dozens of police stations that just don't report their crime stats to the FBI anymore. So they don't get put into the numbers. So when they come out with the numbers, they're missing huge swaths of data, which makes it look like the crime is going down. Or like we saw that, a black lawyer guy saying, he's like, it's really easy to stop crime if you just stop prosecuting crimes. Like, yeah, I guess if you don't do anything about the crime, then it never gets entered into the statistics, and it looks like crime is going down, even though it's going up. So that's what's happening there. But none of that's the biggest issue. No, the biggest issue is disinformation, i.e. information that they don't want you to hear. 5 years in prison for accessing violent extremist material online. Of course, we saw Sam Malia get thrown into prison for 2 years for putting stickers that simply show government statistics about demographics in the UK. Weaponization Committee reveals Amazon censored books critical of COVID vaccines at the request of the Biden White House. The UK government labeled George Orwell, Aldous Huxley, and Shakespeare to be extremist literature. Opposition to mRNA injections is also now considered a crime in France. You cannot oppose the novel medical intervention that has utterly failed to prove its efficacy. Still can't say that. What I just did would be a crime in France. CBS also seized the confidential files of a fired reporter who was pursuing the Biden laptop story in an unprecedented move. Christian persecution is alive and well in Canada, as they say that your sincerely held political beliefs are no longer a protection against hate crime charges. And this combines, of course, with the Liberals in Canada's hate crime bill, in which speech could leave you vulnerable to a $70,000 fine and life imprisonment for hate if you say the wrong thing. U.S. is leading a global alliance to counter foreign government disinformation. And in the U.K., right-wing British activists sentenced to 2 years in prison over anti-immigration stickers. So, again, this is happening in a worldwide fashion. And in particular, I think it's interesting, the U.S. leading global alliance to counter foreign government disinformation. I thought this line in particular from the story we covered yesterday, I meant to point it out, but I think it goes to the headspace of the censors and how tenuous the connection to foreign states can be for them to justify using those foreign states to censor your material. So, again, this was from the story. Many of you owe the Princess of Wales a massive apology, which is combined with the other headline that was like, conspiracy, big tech needs to crack down on conspiracy theories about the Princess of Wales, right? How dare you question this mystery? I mean, it's a mystery. She's just disappeared for 3 months. But if you speculate as to why that might be, they want big tech to censor you. And one of the reasons that they say this, and just listen to how they frame this sentence. Despite Kensington Palace outlining a reasonably fixed and limited timeline from the start, the princess would return to public life around Easter, it said. A coordinated disinformation campaign, cheered on by the Russians, decided to torment Catherine and her family. Okay? A coordinated disinformation campaign, cheered on by the Russians, decided to torment Catherine and her family. You'll notice that if you're just reading this story, what you come away with is the concept, the idea, what's been implanted in your mind is that the Russians are running a coordinated disinformation campaign. But that's not what the sentence says, is it? What it said was that it was a coordinated campaign, which I don't think it was. I mean, that gives you the idea that there's some shadowy force that's sending out people to speculate about Kate Middleton. No, everybody was just speculating on their own. There was no coordinated attempt. A lot of people were doing it all at once because it was a big mystery that nobody had the answer to. So obviously people are going to be speculating and people are going to hear speculation. They're going to say, oh, that's an interesting idea. Maybe I'll combine that with this. And then they expand on that theory, right? Theories that there was abuse going on, theories that she was divorcing her husband because he cheated on her, theories that she had cancer. Oh, well, that one turned out to be right. But still, you're not allowed to speculate. It wasn't coordinated by any means, and it certainly wasn't coordinated by the Russians. They didn't even say it was. What they said was it was cheered on by the Russians. Cheered on by the Russians. So in other words, they lie or they conceal information. This causes a lack of trust in the mainstream media, especially when they're releasing photoshopped pictures to dispel the rumors of and conspiracy theories. Oh, well, here's a picture. Shut up. Shut up. She's fine. Here's a picture. We just took this, and it's like a picture from 6 months ago, and it's AI generated, and it's been edited, obviously. That causes mistrust in the establishment of the UK, I guess, because Russia is de facto at war with NATO. Then anything that disrupts the control of the British government would, I guess, be tangentially beneficial for the Russians. And so the Russians were cheering on the conspiracy theories. And so therefore, the conspiracy theories are Russian disinformation. Do you see what I'm saying here? Do you see how this works? So if you question the government, you're an enemy, basically. Basically, you're doing the work of our enemy that we're at war with if you dare to even speculate about a mystery. Again, they didn't say what was happening and they weren't upfront and honest about it. So you can't blame people for speculating when a princess just disappears for 3 months and it's completely hushed up and quieted up and they're releasing fake photos about it. There's nothing bad about doing that. But to these people, that causes mistrust in the government and that benefits Russia. Therefore, Russia is cheering it on. Therefore, you now have a foreign adversary who's benefiting from the disinformation, so you have to be censored because we're at war after all. I mean, it's very weird. It's very weird the way that they are carrying this out and the way that they, again, very, very carefully use their words to, yeah, and Iran. Yeah, China, Russia, and Iran are fueling these theories. I can't even think of a more insane example where a princess just goes missing. people are going to speculate. Like, what do they expect? They expect the whole population to just go, well, we don't know, but we don't deserve to know. The elite will tell us when they're ready to tell us. We are not worthy of knowing. We must not speculate. We must not wonder. We must not be curious. We just, if they don't want to tell us, then we don't know, and we have to pretend that we don't care that we don't know. It's just, so obviously people are going to speculate. And yeah, if you're not trustworthy, I guess that benefits Russia. Anyway, it's just that line, a coordinated disinformation campaign cheered on by the Russians. They were cheering it on. So I guess if you say anything against the government, your government's enemies are going to cheer that on, meaning you're carrying water for Russia, meaning you have to be shut down and censored. And you can just see how that would obviously be applied to so many other things in America or Western Europe, where just questioning the government, you're a Russian agent, and they'll shut you down. And so, of course, their DOJ is launching this National Resource Center. The EU is going to start fining platforms for election disinformation, i.e. saying things they don't want you to know. The regime, the banking cartel, will destroy your business. Even if you have customers, they will prevent them from paying you by blacklisting your account and debanking you. TikTok is reportedly purging videos critical of hormonal birth control following Washington Post hatchet job linking birth control skepticism to the far right. So TikTok is reportedly scrubbing content posted that is critical of the impact of hormonal birth control on women and girls. This is a big trend now. It's a surge. People are realizing that it's probably not the best thing for your health to drastically alter your hormones in order to prevent getting pregnant. The sudden cleanup follows a lengthy article by the Washington Post condemning the recent surge in young women announcing they were ditching their birth control in favor of more natural methods of contraception. Last week, the Washington Post ran an article by Lauren Weber and Sabrina Malhi titled "Women Are Getting Off Birth Control Amid Misinformation Explosion." The article warned about a backlash to birth control coming at a time when rampant disinformation about basic health tenets amid poor digital literacy and wider political debate over reproductive rights, in which far-right conservatives argue that broad acceptance of birth control has altered traditional gender roles and weakened the family, which obviously it has, but you're not allowed to talk about it. In the article, the Washington Post boasted that TikTok had removed at least five videos linking birth control to mental health issues and other health problems after the Post asked how the company prevents the spread of misinformation. So if you don't think that it's a good thing that a huge number of young women are taking hormone-altering pills that literally change the chemical composition of your brain, and maybe saying that that's not a good thing, especially not when it's mass adopted by an entire population, you are apparently spreading misinformation. You know, same as mRNA, right? You're not allowed to question the mRNA vaccine in France, despite it being just completely, utterly ineffective and dangerous. You're not allowed to question birth control, even though the side effects and outcome of birth control that's negative is never addressed or advertised. It's not like when girls go to get on the pill, they're told, oh, by the way, this will change everything about your brain chemistry. I mean, there have been, you know, when this really started being talked about was when people realized that, like, it alters your mind's interpretation of pheromones. And, you know, this is one of the things that as humans, you know, we're not purely auditory, visual creatures. We have scent and smell and pheromones, and, like, that's a huge part of attraction. In a very weird way, there have been scientific studies where, like, they'll show women pictures of men and they'll decide who's they find most attractive, and then they'll actually have those women smell samples of, like, the sweat of the guys, and they'll rank them exactly the same. Like, there's some weird connection where when you're attracted to somebody, they smell good. Their body odor smells good to you. And what happens is in birth control, that actually changes to where you're then attracted to people that are different than people that you're attracted to when you're not on birth control. So what'll happen is people will fall in love when they're dating on birth control. They'll get married. The woman goes off birth control. She reverts back to how she was before birth control, and she is no longer attracted to her husband because her brain is interpreting the pheromone signals differently. It's like hard to overstate what a subtle but massive effect this can have on women's minds. This is like a pretty common thing. You're not allowed to talk about that. Obviously, they're not going to tell you that. It's kind of horrifying. You know, these signals that that our brains are interpreting that we don't consciously evaluate, but just alter how we see the world and how we think about people or things or how we feel about stuff. Like, that stuff is being changed very subtly but permanently whenever you're on birth control. But you can't talk about any of this. TikTok will remove your video at the behest of the Washington Post for daring to say that maybe not every woman should be on hormone-altering birth control. Maybe there's better ways to do things that don't require you to chemically lobotomize yourself. But moving on, police in Scotland are going to stop investigating crimes while they enforce new anti-free speech laws. As it prepares to investigate every report it receives under the new Hate Crime Act, Police Scotland admits that a separate plan to stop investigating crimes like theft and criminal damage will help criminals. A Police Scotland pilot in Aberdeen, which was deemed a success, means more than 24,000 offenses a year will no longer be allocated to frontline officers. The body refused to tell the Telegraph which offenses would not be investigated, asserting that police would provide criminals with a tactical advantage. Police Scotland refused to release the data, claiming that admitting which crimes the policy could apply to would risk handing those with criminal intent the opportunity to plan and orchestrate their criminal activities with the aim to avoid detection. And we covered, before how police in the UK are no longer investigating crimes that don't have CTV, like closed caption or closed circuit TV footage of the person committing the crime. They just aren't going to worry about investigating it. Basically, if you can do it without getting a picture taken of your face, you're going to get away with it. The absurdity of this plan to no longer investigate certain crimes, that they won't tell you which ones they are, the absurdity of that plan is heightened by the fact that from April 1st, hate crime legislation comes into force in Scotland that will require additional resources to assess every single report. Farrell admitted that this new law could create additional demand and create a resource implication for the police. So they're so overwhelmed with crime that they're just no longer investigating certain crimes, but they are simultaneously training and hiring new police to go after hate speech laws, which of course means things in the UK like pointing out the demographic change that's taking place in your country or opposing illegal immigration. It's hard to overstate how insane all of this is, but yes, they are going to stop investigating actual crimes to go after fake non-crime thought crimes. Meanwhile, Kate Starbird led the censorship efforts against Gateway Pundit in 2022. Now her goal is to control your speech on X. On Sunday night, 60 Minutes, a news magazine invited anti-free speech zealot Kate Starbird on to discuss the necessity to control thoughts and speech in America today. She went on 60 Minutes to argue the need to control free speech in America so that only one viewpoint is allowed to reach the masses, with Leslie Stahl asking Kate Starbird, saying social media platforms often ignore the researchers' suggestions. So you've got this woman, Kate Starbird, that's like, we don't like people talking about this. And the big tech media companies like, well, who are you? What? I don't care if you don't like somebody talking about something. We're not going to censor them. And the way that's presented by the 60 Minutes is social media platforms ignore the researchers' suggestions. She's just trying to help, and they're not listening to her. Kate Starbird says, the statistics I've seen are just for the Twitter platform, but my understanding is they responded to about 30% of the things we sent them. And I think on a majority of those, they put labels. But just a third? Leslie Stahl asked. Just a third? He's just badgering Twitter. Take down this misgendering. Take down this these people talking about race. These people are talking about anti-Semitism. Take that down. And for a good third of them, they comply. But that's not enough. And Leslie Stahl, media stalwart, she's upset that only a third of the takedown orders are adhered to. It should be a lot more than that, obviously. Texas Lindsay says, Comrade State Starbird played a massive role within the censorship industrial complex in the Twitter files. She continues to lobby hard for access to X. to try to control what we can and cannot read or say without a hall monitor's approval. So who died and made Kate Starbird director of Truth in Speech in America? She's been working with government agencies to stifle free speech in America for years now. She was successful in her efforts to censor and blacklist the Gateway Pundit before the 2022 election. Now her goal is to control all speech on X. Starbird is a key player in the government censorship complex. But again, you know, the real question is, who the hell are you? And what gave you the right? That's, who is this lady? Who cares what she has to say? Why is she even on 60 Minutes? Just treat her like you treat, like we should be treating the head of the ADL, Jonathan Greenblatt, or anybody else that appoints themselves as overlords and censors in America. They're just Americans. They're no better or different or higher than you and I. They're lower. They're like worms. They eat poop and live in the dirt. They look like worms and act like worms. They have worm souls. So who are they? Who are they to dictate what anybody says about anything? It's weird because when they go on 60 Minutes, when they're surrounded with other people acting like they're authorities, we get the idea that they have some sort of justification. When they call themselves researchers, when they list off their accolades from universities and academia, you get the impression that they have some remit, some ability to censor people. Just remember, they're just people. They're just human beings. They're just sort of annoying, Dolores Umbridge-style busybodies. These people should be ostracized from our society completely the minute they think they have the right to dictate to anybody what they can say about anything. They should be, you should just laugh in their face. That's why I like to call Jonathan Greenblatt like Harvey Westbrook. Harvey Westbrook says you shouldn't be allowed to talk bad about his religion. It's like, well, who the hell is that? Some dude? He's a carpenter from Odessa, Texas. Like, what? And why would he have the right to dictate anything from anybody? Well, they're given this authority. They're presented as if they have some authority to do any of this. They don't. They just don't. She's just some weird-looking lady. She's just some bizarre-looking female with a haircut that we're all going to look back on and laugh at in a couple years. She's just an unhappy, contemptible shrew that deserves nothing, that has no right to tell anybody what they think about anything. But for some reason, she does and can. And big tech does what she wants. I don't care if you're, you know, advertising your homosexuality with your haircut. You don't get to tell us what we can say about transgender kids. That's really like the big takeaway. Like, you can strip away all of the policy and the censorship and the various outlets that are combining to do this. Just know there's a bunch of weird, busybody freaks out there that have appointed themselves hall monitors. You wouldn't accept it in your own life. Some random lady came up to you, or you're talking to your friend in the diner. You're sitting there talking to your friend about something that happened to you. And some lady comes up. Excuse me. Are you talking about gay people? You are not allowed to talk about gay people. You are not allowed to talk about things I don't want you to talk about. You get permission from me before you speak. Would you stand for that in your personal life? Then why are they getting to do that to millions of people all at once on the internet? These people are the enemies of InfoWars, but they're the enemies of humanity. They're the enemies of America. They're the enemies of free speech and human thought worldwide. They are the enemy. If you go to the White House, one of the main whitehouse.gov, one of the main pictures on the front is a bridge. I'm just trying to make it a little bit more accurate here. We can bring up my screen here. We got President Joe Biden investing in America. Beautiful bridges in front of a city skyline. I think maybe a picture like this might look a little bit better. There you go. Something like that, I think, on the whitehouse.gov infrastructure page is a little bit more accurate as to the abilities of the administration. investing in America, delivering results just like we planned. We can go, yeah, there you go. There you go, investing in America. Well done. When you, I mean, it's funny, I don't want to blame it all on diversity. But when you make the head of your Department of Transportation, when you make the choice for that position based solely on the fact that he's a gay man, I think maybe you get what you deserve. Well, we all get what you deserve, which is unfortunate. So I really just want to stick with censorship for a little bit. Because it really just goes on and on. The story at InfoWars, if Republicans succeed at banning TikTok, you can say goodbye to InfoWars and Brideon too. Again, a very, very annoying thing. Conservative lawmakers are utterly embarrassing themselves by trying to ban TikTok while also claiming to support free speech and the First Amendment. I want to remind you again, the actual reason they're banning TikTok is because when you use TikTok every 30 minutes, you become 17% more anti-Semitic. That was the statement from Nikki Haley. Remember, they tried to ban TikTok, or at least restrict its activities, all the way back in 2018. Not a single shred of support. Nobody's interested. Nobody cared. You know, Chinese ownership, whatever. Algorithmic destruction of the minds of our children, doesn't matter. Nobody cared. Nobody got into it. It never even got to the House for a vote. Like, it just died as soon as it was mentioned, basically. Now, between then and now, nothing has changed in the ownership of TikTok. Nothing has changed as to the algorithmic dictates of TikTok. The thing that's changed is October 7th happened, and Israel started murdering tens of thousands of Palestinians, and videos of that have gone viral on TikTok. And there's a huge plethora of anti-Israel, pro-Palestine content on TikTok. And so we went from nobody wanting to ban TikTok to everybody on both aisles wanting to ban TikTok, and people still think it's about China. Why weren't they on board in 2018 then? It's all about China. Why weren't they on board 6 years ago? Because that has nothing to do with China. They're using that as the excuse. But once again, like what happened with Claudine Gay in Harvard, the Israelis will, you know, want something banned or want somebody fired. The Republicans are happily jump at the orders and then take the blame for it, even though it doesn't do anything to benefit us. Should TikTok be banned or be forced to sold to an American company, it would, like Facebook and Meta and Google and previously Twitter. It'll continue to pump out degenerate trash for your children. It'll continue to promote communists and socialists and all of the things that are destroying our country. It will continue to do that. It just won't be Israel friendly. That's the only difference. Now, interestingly, they did actually call the legislation to ban TikTok the Restrict Act, which is interesting because that's different than how they normally do things. You know, if you're going to write a bill whose entire purpose is to provide the framework by which you can tyrannize and criminalize patriots, you call it the Patriot Act. Right? When you're setting the groundwork for making illegal active defense of the country, you call that the Patriot Act. So I would expect when they were banning TikTok, they would call it like the free speech expansion bill or something like that. It's interesting that they called it restrict because they are restricting speech. They don't usually label their plots, their schemes accurately. But here they did. They called it the Restrict Act. I would have expected it to be the TikTok Freedom Act, the TikTok Free Speech Expansion Bill, or like they could call it a climate change bill, maybe something like that. I would have expected something like that. Yes, this is called the Focus on the Climate Bill. It bans TikTok. That's the type of thing the leftists are usually into. But they do call it the Restrict Act. It's short for Restricting the Emergence of Security Threats and Risk Information and Communication Technology Act. Yikes, that's a mouthful. It would allow the Secretary of Commerce to blacklist any tech product service company that linked to a national adversary, in this case China, as decided by the Secretary. But of course, they point out that it is ostensibly based on TikTok, ostensibly based on the foreign threat from China. In reality, it's because the ADL and AIPAC and Israel itself fought for this. But it doesn't actually stop with TikTok. It could really ban any website or media outlet such as InfoWars or Brighteon who could be targeted for elimination based on the foreign threat concept. And as we talked about earlier, it doesn't have to actually come from a foreign country. It doesn't have to actually be Russian disinformation. If it's anti-American, it is de facto pro-Russian. If the Russians like that you posted it, if they agree with what you're saying, then you're a foreign adversary. The Russians are cheering you on, so you therefore need to be shut down. That's the way this works. Another story in Maryland here. We'll get to that one in just a second. Middle schoolers charged with anti-Semitic hate crime. Three middle schoolers have been criminally charged over an alleged incident involving anti-Semitic harassment. The suspects, all of whom are 13 years old, now face hate crime violations in the latest push to prosecute children for hate speech in the United States. According to Calvert County State's attorney, three young children at Plum Point Middle School in Southern Maryland have been charged with hate crime in connection to the harassment of a fellow Jewish student. 13-year-old suspects are alleged to have displayed swastikas, made Nazi salutes, and directed offensive comments to a classmate because of the classmate's religious beliefs. Yeah, obviously you don't have this for any other religion, really. Nor should you, nor would you. And if you just imagine if it was applied to another religion, how quickly that would get out of hand. Religious persecution has no place in our society. Yeah, well, I said this before, but so they displayed swastikas. Why is the swastika bad? Bad because it represents the Nazis? Why are the Nazis bad? Because they were a totalitarian, tyrannical, murderous regime that destroyed free speech and demanded absolute adherence to the whims of the state. See, I'm against what the swastika represents. I'm not against the little symbol. That's just a little symbol. It's on maps in Japan to tell you where the temples are. The symbol is not the problem. The ideology it represents is the problem. The ideology it represents is the type of ideology that has you prosecuting 13-year-olds for crimes for showing a little symbol. The thing that the swastika is supposed to represent is supposed to be a tyrannical regime that has no value of free speech, free expression, and individual rights. You're using that symbol now to justify your destruction of free speech and individual rights of children. Does nobody get that? Is it the symbol that's bad, or is it the thing the symbol represents that's bad? We got other stuff to get into here. And we'll take your calls throughout this hour, throughout the next hour as well. I'll go ahead and open up the phone lines right now if you want to call in. I'm looking for new callers mostly. If you are a regular caller, maybe just hold off for a little bit. And if you're a new caller, call in and we'll get to you as soon as possible. Taking your calls throughout the next hour, 1-877-789-2539. Give us a call here on the American Journal, 1-877-789-2539. There is so much to talk about. Censorship is such a big deal, and the insane lengths to which it's going now have to be confronted. And the absurd misapplication of laws or selective enforcement of laws, really something to behold. It's hard to even express how inverted things are. So middle schoolers charged with anti-Semitic hate crime, right? Not just punished in the schools for bullying or whatever, but actually charged with crimes at 13 years old. Think about stuff you did and said when you were 13, okay? It's a goofy age, folks. Kids say things deliberately just to be offensive. A lot. That's a crime now, if it's to the wrong people. Simultaneously, these same kids are being taught in school that white people are uniquely evil and responsible for all the bad things in the world. Again, you've got this exponential inversion. I don't know what you'd call it exactly. But unfair or just biased would be black people make fun of white people make fun of black people, the black people get let go and the white people get punished. That would be unfair, misapplication. In this instance, you've got an entire industry, professionals, the entire education system being hateful towards white people, like institutionally, and then white 13-year-olds mocking a classmate because he's Jewish. They're charged with a hate crime, but then they're also sent to class where they're told that their DNA is corrupted and that they're responsible for all of the ills in the world. It's not just unfair. It's not just bias. It's not just unequal. It is inverted beyond description. And this article from Justice Report lays out some other examples of anti-white activity that has gone unprosecuted. They say, while neoliberal repression would manifest itself very quickly in the defense of Jewish students at Plum Point, the same could not be said about white students in similar situations. In 2023, white students of Kenwood Elementary School in Springfield, Ohio, were forced to support Black Lives Matter by a gang of black students. A video of the humiliating incident was later released to the Justice Report through a Freedom of Information Act request, where it quickly went viral. Y'all remember that video? It's these little, like, first-grade kids and, like, first-grade white kids and these, like, sixth-grade black kids basically beating them and, like, forcing them on their knees and forcing them to say Black Lives Matter. Investigators later admitted the incident appeared to be a case of anti-white hate, which would qualify as a hate crime. Despite this, no such charges were ever publicly announced, and the school board refused to provide updates to outraged white parents on what disciplinary actions were ultimately taken. Again, just a little bit more than unfair, not the only incident. This incident would come on the heels of another abhorrent case of race-based schoolyard bullying. In Berkeley Township, New Jersey, 14-year-old Adriana Kutch was tormented into committing suicide after black students at Central Regional High School were said to have stalked, harassed, and brutally assaulted her on video. Shockingly, a principal at the school libeled the victim by alluding that Kutch was a drug addict and blaming her parents, not the black suspects, for her eventual suicide. While the system appears to come out in force to protect non-white and Jewish students from alleged acts of mild, non-violent bullying, some say this alarming double standard has only intensified in recent years. Just this month, a different group of middle schoolers were charged for violating the civil rights of black students after they allegedly made racist jokes in a private chat room. So, yeah, private chat room, make racist jokes, you'll be literally charged with crimes. You're violating their civil rights by saying funny words to your friends. But when you have, like, black kids twice the size of white kids forcing those kids to their knees and forcing them to, you know, beg for mercy and apologize for being white, yeah, no disciplinary action taken.
Well, you wouldn't want to, like, destroy their futures, would you?
Right. It's a school-to-prison pipeline. Luckily, white kids don't have to worry about that, so send the children to prison.
And by the way, those 13-year-olds, they could probably have been charged with the same thing when they were probably, like, 8. And yeah. Let that live with them for the rest of their lives.
Hey, look, if you're charging 13-year-olds for their speech, I don't think there's any lower, you know, there's no floor to how low you're willing to go. Again, 13-year-olds. I get going, hey, look, guys, don't be flashing swastikas at the Jewish student, okay? It's just not cool. And now you're under arrest and you're going to be charged with a hate crime. That'll stick with you for the rest of your life. Hate speech cases similar to those in Plum Point have also occurred in places like Connecticut and Louisiana. In most of these alleged incidents, racial comments or slurs are said to have been uttered in jest and shared privately among friends. The prosecutors have become increasingly emboldened in hate crime cases involving minors due to the closed nature of juvenile courts. The veil of secrecy that surrounds these types of trials prevents the general public from accessing further information, allowing activist lawyers the ability to characterize incidents with impunity. So again, I mean, you know, if you're against the swastika, fine. But are you against the Nazi-like behavior of the government as they punish students for a wrong think at the age of 13? I just can't, I honestly can't imagine. I mean, at 13, it was like, I mean, maybe these kids are just, maybe these kids are Nazis and they should just be shot in the head. Maybe they're like Gazans and they should just be starved to death. You know, maybe the real punishment awaits still for daring to speak out against the chosen people. Or maybe they're just like normal kids that are nice and don't really understand what they're doing because they're 13 and just think it's funny and edgy, and they see funny, edgy cartoons on the internet and think it's funny to show their friends. And maybe what you're doing to them now is far and away more psychologically damaging than anything they ever said to any Jew. Like, the punishment should maybe fit the crime. Like, I just think back to, and, you know, eventually you get over the stuff, but, like, you think back to being a 13-year-old and, like, something embarrassing happens, and it's like, it's not like being an adult. When you're an adult and something embarrassing happens, it's like, whatever, who cares, right? Your mindset changes a lot. And even the things that used to, like, everybody has that, right? Where you just think back to something embarrassing you did, and you just get that whole, like, oh, God, you just want to, like, hide in a hole. Like, imagine being 13 and, if you get in trouble at 13 years old, you're made to go stand up in front of the class. It's just this like whole body response where you're just like, oh my God, my life is ruined. I've done, you know, and you blow it out of proportion and you like, you know, it can really affect you. You know, now imagine that you've got like a judge looking down on you and prosecutors condemning you and police, you know, writing you tickets and putting you in handcuffs. I mean, just the psychological torment. It's just like you showed a little windmill. You showed a little cross with some extra parts on it, the swastika. And now you're going to just like be dragged over the coals and like feel like your whole family is now having to go through this and the whole neighborhood hates you and your family. And it's like, for what? For what? Making an edgy joke about Hitler. Well, just kill them. Just kill the kids, I think. I think if you speak out against Jews, like some sort of Gazan journalist, like you should be bombed to death. You should have white phosphorus choking your lungs until you expire. I think that's the appropriate punishment for anti-Semitism. You know, it's kind of like Rabbi Shmuley was having a conversation with Alex Jones, and he said, you know, I hope that Candace Owens gets the same treatment you did about Sandy Hook. It's like, okay, so the point of the Sandy Hook thing was to destroy us. It was to bankrupt us completely and destroy our ability to broadcast anymore. So Candace Owens basically said she thinks it's filthy that you sell butt plugs with your daughter, and you think an appropriate response to that should be she should be bankrupted, humiliated, and never allowed to speak out publicly again. You sound like a Nazi. You sound like a card-carrying Nazi extremist. But hey, as long as you're got the Star of David, not the swastika, it's different. It's fine. It's fine to censor and to destroy free speech and to be a totalitarian a-hole as long as you don't do it with a swastika. All right, welcome back, folks. We're going to go out to your phone calls this hour. I got some videos to show you out of Russia and having to do with the migrant crisis in New York. I want to talk about two things happening in Europe right now. One is the just absolutely insane way that Germany is treating one of its most popular political parties, AfD, Alternative for Deutschland. It is, I believe at this point, the most popular party, and so they're trying to ban it. Because what is democracy other than banning what the people want, right? Again, literal inversion of democracy, but it goes farther than that. as InfoWars has the story. German doctor refuses to treat AFD politician. A doctor in the German state of Baden-Württemberg refuses to treat one of his patients because he's a local politician in the Alternative for Germany party. I mean, you had 80% of Democrats saying that people who didn't get the vaccine should be denied health care. So why not deny health care based on beliefs? Why not ban health care to people that are anti-immigrant? Why should somebody who questions the official narrative be allowed to have health care? And of course, this is combining with what we know is happening in medical schools, places like Johns Hopkins, well, every medical school basically in America, that is taking racial equity into account when considering medical diagnoses. I personally was denied medicine for COVID because I didn't have a high enough equity score. I was white, after all. If I'd been Harrison Gonzalez, I would have gotten the treatment, but I'm Harrison Smith, so I'm worth less and don't deserve medical treatment in this country. That actually happened. So why not? Why should everybody get medical treatment? So if you don't agree with the mainstream media, you have to die now. Yeah, honestly, it's just, it is completely insane. The guy was a Christian Democrat politician for 26 years. He moved over to AFD because the CDU had changed. The Christian Democrat Party had changed and was no longer concerned with things like Euro and migration policy and nuclear energy. So he says the AFD is the new CDU, by no means right-wing extremist. Well, tell that to the media, because they're calling you a white right-wing extremist. And so, you know, treating you would be like giving comfort to the enemy, be like treating a terrorist. But the doctor's not going to do that. Sure, he took an oath to treat people regardless of who they are, and he would have no qualms about treating a murderer or a rapist or anything of the sort. But if you think the wrong things, if you don't agree with the neoliberal world order, they don't even need to do anything. Like, this isn't a conspiracy. This is just a doctor doing what he is being socially incentivized to do. Deny medical treatment to people on the basis of their beliefs. This is what he's been told is makes him a moral good person. That's how inverted things are. Finally, we have this information liberation. French influencer faces 7 years in prison for mocking debunked story of Hamas cooking baby in oven. French influencer Warda Anwar is facing 7 years in prison and a 100,000 euro fine for mocking the debunked story of Hamas baking a baby in an oven by joking she wonders if they put salt, pepper, and added thyme. The Israeli government and Jewish activist groups demanded Anwar be charged for her comedy under France's anti-terrorism and hate speech laws, and the government swiftly arrested her and hit her with a host of charges. So this never happened. This never happened. There were no babies that were baked. It was a complete lie. It was a total fabrication. She joked about it, knowing full well it was a lie. Now she faces 7 years in prison and a 100,000 euro fine for mocking the fake stories. They get to make something up that is outrageous and stupid and ridiculous on the face of it. But if you mock it, you go to jail for 7 years. I may have misspoken earlier. Somebody DM'd me on Twitter saying, I guess I said Francis Scott Key wrote the Declaration of Independence. No, I meant the Star Spangled Banner, the national anthem, not the Declaration of Independence. Minor correction here on American Journal. We're going to go out to your phone calls here momentarily. I want to go to a couple videos. Let's first go to clip number 12. This is Vladimir Putin blaming the West for the terror attack on Moscow yesterday. Let's watch.
Rises. Who is to benefit? This crime can only be a link in a chain of attempts by those who are at war with our country since 2014. The Nazis, the Kiev regime, who never stopped at any means using any kinds of inhuman tactics to achieve their goals, especially now when their so-called counteroffensive has failed, as recognized by everyone, and the Russian armed forces possess the initiative along the entire front line, and no attempts to stabilize the situation for the Ukrainian sides have been successful. This has led to their attempts to penetrate our borders and their shellings of Russian civilian infrastructure, including energy infrastructure, their attempts to make strikes at the Crimean Bridge, the Crimean Peninsula. These steps make up a logical sequence of terrorist attacks and attempts to intimidate the Russian society and sow discord. At the same time, to show their own population that the Kiev regime is still strong, that the only thing people need is to obey the orders that come from Washington, fight to the last Ukrainian, and to adopt new orders on mobilization, create youth brigades like Hitler used to have, and the money that are being provided for these purposes will certainly be appropriated by the higher-ups, like has happened in Ukraine.
So is Putin squarely putting the blame on Ukraine and its Western backers? Russian blames Ukraine, the West, over Moscow concert hall attack, basically saying we know who did it now. We want to know who was paying for it, who was orchestrating it. And of course, we saw the report from Greg Reese that laid out a number of suspicious events just before that happened. But of course, the Biden administration is denying it. We'll go now to clip number 16. And I got to say, I've never been impressed with Karine Jean-Pierre, her ability as White House spokesperson. But she's really set new records in terms of how low the standard can go. It's honestly just embarrassing for all of us that this woman represents the office of the leader of our country. Let's go now to clip number 16.
In early March, the United States, this government shared information with Russia about a planned terror attack in Moscow. We were very clear about that on March 7th. We actually informed Americans in Russia did a public advisory, to be more specific. And, ISIS bears the sole responsibility here. The sole responsibility, and Mr. Putin understands that. We shared that with their government. And so there is no evidence, absolutely no evidence, that Ukraine was involved here.
How did you go about sharing that information? Through the State Department, U.S. Embassy?
I'm just not going to get into specifics. We, the U.S. government, share that with Russian authorities, and I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, I'm a little bit suspicious. You know, there's a great YouTuber I've been watching recently called Deception Detective. Shout out to Deception Detective. If you're a follower of his, let him know I'm a fan. Because what he does is, it's similar to sort of like body language channels, but he completely ignores the body language and just looks at the words people use. And he has certain sort of criteria that you use to determine whether somebody is being deceptive or not, whether they're lying or concealing something, that I find way, way, way more convincing than body language interpretation, which seems to me just like a method of confirming what you already believed. But when it comes to deception and the words people use, one of the things that's stuck out in my mind is he always talks about when people are pulling a hoax, they have certitude that people not pulling a hoax off don't have. So in other words, if your child goes missing and you actually didn't do anything and it really is a mystery and your child really did get kidnapped or ran away or something, you never are certain about what happened. you're open and willing to entertain any possibility. It could have been taken. Could have been taken by a family member. Could have been taken by my best friend. Could have been grabbed by a wolf and dragged into the woods. Like, we just want to find my kid. Whatever we can do to find him, possibilities are endless. When you have a hoaxer, they are certain about what happened with no evidence. They go, it was a kidnapping. My child was kidnapped 100%. That's what happened. We're not going to even entertain any other ideas. It's like, okay, but you don't have any evidence for that. So why are you so certain? So that's what comes to my mind when you hear Karine Jean-Pierre go, this, we don't know who did it. We don't have any information, but it was 100% ISIS. ISIS definitely bears sole responsibility, and that's the only conclusion you're allowed to come to. But they don't have any evidence. They don't have any information. If they did have evidence or information this quickly and without access to Russia to investigate, unless you're on the ground in Russia investigating, how would you investigate this? So you can't have any information. If you did have evidence, it would probably mean that you were like a part of it because you would have had to gather that information before the event happened, or you would have some inside knowledge about how the event was carried out. For her to be that certain that it was 100% ISIS and it was only ISIS and Ukraine had nothing to do with it, and there's no evidence that Ukraine had anything to do with it. Well, is there evidence ISIS had anything to do with it? Not really. So when she says there's no evidence, I mean, she just means, that just means nothing. It basically just means nothing. It basically just means that Ukraine didn't admit to it, or the CIA said that Ukraine had nothing to do with it. It doesn't actually mean anything. But the level of certainty that she says, it makes you think it's a hoax. It's almost got to be a hoax. Or they do have information that it was ISIS, and it would have been information that they would have gathered before the event happened, meaning that they're complicit in one way or another. But let's go out to your phone calls now, and we'll go to some more videos in just a little bit. We've got Larry in New Jersey. Just called in. We'll go to him first in line 11 because he's talking about the bridge collapse. I know you're still screening his call, but go ahead, Larry. You're on the air.
It's just, you know, the not just the bridge, the traffic, it's the port. Now Baltimore could be really hurt from this with people getting goods because it was it's a very busy port. But I think they said the eighth largest in the country. So.
Yeah, I think what I read was ninth largest. I'm not sure if that was the country. It may have been the world. I mean, it is a huge port.
Yeah.
It is a huge port. And no, you're exactly right. I mean, $80 billion a year that port makes.
Right. Oh, yeah,
Larry,
I don't know.
Larry, by the way, I don't know. I interrupted you because I want to talk about the bridge collapse anyway. You are on the air now. I think maybe we interrupted your call screening. Because I saw that you wanted to talk about the bridge, and I had some new stories about the bridge, so I wanted to go to you first. So, sorry, we sort of interrupted your call screening right in the middle there. But yeah,
go ahead. Okay.
What are your thoughts on the bridge collapse? Because yeah, obviously this shuts down Baltimore Port for the time being, and that is a massive, massive piece of infrastructure that's gone down and shut down the whole shipping operation there. What else do you have for us on the bridge?
Yeah. Well, you know, just the way that it's, like you're saying, it's going to affect the economy and many things. And I think about the traffic, how the tractor trailers are not allowed to go under the tunnels there. So with 695 being closed down, it's going to affect I-95 drastically because it's going to take years to have another course of action there before they get it repaired. But, you know, I just thought things were funny with the way that it hit dead on. I mean, it looked so intentional.
It looked intentional. I completely agree. It's like that. This wasn't a side swipe. This was not. I mean, it looked intentional. It's like, how do you do that by accident? They headed right towards it.
Yeah, and the last thing I was thinking, of course, it happened after the goods were delivered. I mean, they were heading to Singapore. I mean. I don't know. But I thank you so much for taking my call. I am a huge fan. I just want you to know that. And thank you for doing what you do.
Well, thank you.
Larry from New Jersey, man.
Thank you very much, Larry. I appreciate those kind words. We do have some more information about this. And I don't know what you make of this headline. Doomed cargo ship Dali, D-A-L-I, was being piloted by a local crew who were trained to avoid obstacles in the Baltimore port. You would think that that's exactly what they would be trained to do. I mean,
then it seems like more incompetence coming out of Baltimore, if you ask me.
Yeah. It was a local organization.
Wow, that's incredible. That is incredible.
Yeah, it apparently lost power and propulsion here. So the ship, the 948-foot-long dolly operated by Singaporean company Synergy Group, collided with the 1.2-mile bridge shortly after 1:26 a.m. as it departed the city of Baltimore, the port of Baltimore. Maryland Transportation Secretary Paul Wheatfield told a Tuesday morning press conference that it appears none of the 22 crew members were injured, as he revealed it was being steered by the specialist pilots. Pilots move ships in and out of the port of Baltimore, noting that specialist pilots depart the ships as soon as they're in open water. You have one job, pilot. You have one job. You've been specifically trained to avoid this obstacle and this obstacle alone. Officials were quick to rule out the catastrophe as intentional or an act of terrorism. And an early Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency report found the container ship, quote, lost propulsion as it was leaving port. The vessel notified MD Department of Transportation that they'd lost control of the vessel, and an elision between collision with the bridge was possible. The vehicle struck the bridge, causing a complete collapse. Apparently lost propulsion and control. Still, the dolly container ship had undergone 27 inspections since 2015 and had been found to have two deficiencies, according to a CNN review of records. Notably, this included a June 2023 inspection in San Antonio, Chile, where a deficiency was found in the propulsion and auxiliary machinery, with propulsion faults also noted in an early CISO report. It was also involved in a 2016 incident at the port of Antwerp. A review in November of that year in Antwerp, Belgium, found another deficiency in its structural conditions. No deficiency was found when the vehicle was last inspected on September 9th by U.S. Coast Guard. All activity out of the port of Baltimore has ground to a total halt. I just think it's funny when they're like, it was piloted by a crew specifically trained to avoid obstacles in the Baltimore port. Okay. Great. So it looks like that's all the new information we have.
It's actually really common for a local pilot crew,
right?
In most ports, like in New Orleans, for example, it's just a team of elected pilots that are responsible for boarding the ship and guiding it into the port because they know the waterway like the back of their hand. State law.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I know, like, once it gets into port, I imagine it's taken over by like tugboats. That can more, you know, carefully.
Yeah, they'll bring it to the moorings.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get that it's I get that there's pilots specifically for each port that are, you know, experts at bringing the ship in. I just think it's funny that they note that they were specifically trained to avoid obstacles. It's like saying, you know, pilots are trained to avoid the ground. It's like, yeah, I would think so. Specifically trained. Truck drivers are specifically trained to stay on the road, and yet this one is in a ditch. Yes, you should avoid the bridge. Let's see, AP cargo ship issued a mayday. So it did appear as though they issued a mayday call moments before the crash that took down the Francis Scott Key Bridge, enabling authorities to limit vehicle traffic on the span, Maryland's governor said. The ship crashed into one of the bridges' support. We saw that. And a crew of unknown size was working on the bridge at the time of the collapse, and the sonar had detected cars in the water, which is about 50 feet deep. The water temperature is about 47 degrees before dawn Tuesday. Is there any more information about this in this article, guys? They just brought this to me, so I haven't had time to read this article yet. But it does appear as though they issued a mayday report. And like I said, you can actually see the lights of the cargo ship sort of flicker on and off beforehand. So obviously there was some sort of mechanical issue there. But other people are guessing and speculating that this might have, I mean, following what happened in Moscow with Russia blaming America for the terrorist attack. Let's go back out to the phone calls now. Thank you very much for that call, Larry. Let's go to Rob in Pennsylvania. I didn't notice you called in also about the bridge that fell in Baltimore. Go ahead, Rob. You're on the air.
Hey, so I grew up in Baltimore, and I have to disagree with the last caller, Larry, where it's incompetence coming out of Baltimore, because I feel that I'm very competent, and I agree with you where if it was their only job to sail, you know, the ports of Baltimore, then they're stationed somewhere around those ports. They probably live in and out of the hotels around there, and that's really the only waters that they stay in. So I don't think that it just happened to be, you know, an accident. I think somebody staged it, and I don't think that it was Russia because of the thing that went down in Moscow, because I really believe that that was our CIA that trained the Ukrainians and probably paid for it too. Mm-hmm. But I think that Baltimore residents need to watch out for the next couple weeks, maybe, because I think that they're going to take out the tunnels too. Mm. Because if they take out the tunnels, they already took out the bridge. The only roads left in and out of Baltimore are north and south.
Right.
And if you cut off that port from the whole eastern seaboard, half of America is going to be screwed.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Northeast is kind of like that. I know I always got that sort of sense of dread whenever I'd go into New York City. Because, you know, it'd take you like 4 hours just to get into the city on a Sunday afternoon. It's like, man, if there's a disaster, I'm not leaving. You're stuck. You're not going anywhere. I mean, unless you literally have a boat and can take to the water. Like, you've got, you know, two bridges and a tunnel. And if those get shut down, you're screwed. You're stuck there for the time being.
Yeah.
And most, you know, all of the northeastern seaboard is like that, where you've got these massive cities that really don't end. I mean, you can drive from D.C. to New York, and you're never outside of a city. You just move from city to city. There's no sort of, like, you know, green area in between. And, I mean, the gridlock there, yeah, the whole northeast seaboard could be completely devastated and shut down with, like, cutting off a few points, one of which would be Baltimore and the port there. So, I mean, I know, you know, I don't think you should be personally offended at talking about incompetence in Baltimore, but obviously Baltimore has a pretty big issue with competence in their city leadership. The education system is completely failing. I mean, story after story comes out of Baltimore about, I mean, whether it's incompetence or deliberate failure, it's not doing great as a city. So, I mean, no shade on you. Obviously, that doesn't mean everybody in Baltimore is incompetent. I don't think anybody would say that. But I do think that this is sort of evidence and culmination of what we're seeing really nationwide, but particularly in Baltimore, of the lack of standards, the lack of willing to do what's necessary to get people into a position of competency where they'd rather go, well, let's lower standards. Let's not make people do the test. Let's not make people pass at a certain level. It makes them feel bad, so we have to let them do the dangerous things. And this is, you're just going to start seeing more and more of this. So, you know, I get the city pride, and I'm the same way about Houston. I don't want anybody insulting them either. But at the same time, I mean, Baltimore has some problems, doesn't it, Rob?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, considering that they've had a governor that's been, or mayor, I don't remember which one, but he's been associated with rapists and child molesters for the last, I don't know, 20 years or so.
Yep.
Like you said, test scores are down drastically. They can barely, you know, pass people, kids out of high school. I was lucky enough to be born in the 80s, and I made it out just before the fall of the city. You know, it was on its way down when I was growing up, and it was even bad back then. Like, I've been robbed at gunpoint and knife point and stuff like that, and I'm glad to be out of there.
Yeah, honestly, it's hard to convey what parts of Baltimore look like. I was there filming a movie, and I think it was supposed to be set in, like, post-World War II Prague or something, but I mean, there are parts of Baltimore where you're driving through and it's like a ghost town of row houses, where just as far as the eye can see are these, like, empty, depressing looking, you can tell they were obviously beautiful at some point, but entire neighborhoods just emptied and boarded up and trash everywhere, and these giant industrial parks that used to make things and manufacture things and factories all just rusting. just sitting there rusting and poisoning the soil. It's depressing, man. I mean, you look at videos from, like, you might have to go all the way back to the 1920s, but 1950s or whatever in Baltimore. It was a first-class, first-world, beautiful city, and it has just nosedived in every possible way. Let's we got one more minute. Thank you so much for the call, Rob. I do appreciate it, and nothing but love to our Baltimore listeners. Let's go to Michael in Nevada real quick. We only have about a minute left, but you want to talk about the Baltimore bridge collapse. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
So, I have been thinking a lot about the Baltimore ship incident. Basically, we know it's coming from Singapore. I really think back to the Evergreen ship that happened in the Suez Canal. That came from Taiwan. When you think about those two nations, Taiwan and Singapore, those definitely would more have Chinese fingerprints on interaction rather than Russia. I don't think Russia would be interfering with Singaporean crews and Taiwanese crews. That definitely seems like it has more Chinese interaction, and I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Well, the idea would be that it would be a cyber attack of some sort. So, like, Moscow could hack in and actually steer the ship if they wanted. So I don't think the company matters as much. So Matt Baker just sent me this video. I admit I sort of rolled my eyes at it at first because, you know, of course it's the modern age, and we know that the way that any disaster is going to be treated now is with extreme suspicion, for good reason, because, well, 9/11 happened and so many things like that where you realize that the official story is not as it seems and we're being lied to, and there's evidence that you can find in video. So it seems like any major event now, you're going to have conspiracy theories almost immediately spring up about it. And, you know, sometimes it's like, well, there's video of a giant ship crashing into the bridge. I don't think we need any alternative explanation as to what happened. But as I watch this video, I definitely see some things I didn't see before. And I wonder if we can just look into this real quick. And this will, you know, I think our crew will come in handy here, as we may need to do some zoom and enhance CSI stuff on this video. So Matt Baker sent me this video. I sort of was like, okay, you know, dynamite on the bridge. I mean, a ship ran into it. What do you need to talk about dynamite for? But then you watch the video, and definitely there's something there. So what's that about? And also, that is the one thing I have been pointing out this whole show. I mean, the bridge folds like a house of cards. I mean, the whole thing just crumbles in a way that I wouldn't necessarily expect. Let's go ahead and play this video. I'll tell you when we can pull the audio down. But yeah, let's see what this guy on TikTok says.
I'm going to show you. I just showed a video. If you go back, a boat crashed here, but you can see dynamite being let off at every single point. I'm going to do it again. So you have here, 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 charges, boom.
You know, vessels hit for the middle.
On the copy before this, you can clearly see it happened six or seven times. I went right down the line showing each and every fire point. But my point to this video is, let's not get distracted by this.
You can actually see the explosions there.
These videos.
You can pull the audio down now. And he's telling people to post these videos, but use hashtags like P. Diddy. So they get at, they actually get out into the algorithm, because people are searching, you know. If you're going to do a conspiracy video, just tag it with unrelated stuff that is popular, so it gets out to more people. I think that's a clever idea, too. But you guys see that? I mean, there was definitely some flames there. Now, I guess, you know, if you're dealing with physics at that level, you know, dealing with the collapse of a giant bridge, you know, maybe you'd expect to see some sparks or something fly. But there's one in particular. I think it's the next one here. So again, he's just filming his screen. We can actually pull in the version of the video we have that's cleaner and look at it, you know, close up in that way. But there's definitely a flash of some sort that is unexplained, as far as I know.
I think it's a few thousand volts.
A few thousand volts. So there's there's wires
electrical,
going through. Okay, yeah,
lines.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
that does make sense. But again, I sort of. Like, yeah, dynamite. I mean, come on. There's a giant ship runs into it. What do you need dynamite for? Yeah, I guess the electricity makes sense. But yeah, there's definitely a little explosion there. Interesting. Interesting stuff. You know, obviously just a lot of speculation around all of this. Yeah, people saying it looks like the boat could have been hijacked electronically. Let's see. There was a little bit of an but there's also that light on it that then goes out. So yeah, I think electricity is probably the best explanation for that. Still, and there's another sort of explosion. I think that's just electricity arcing. The first one in particular, the first one on the far left of the bridge, there's definitely a sizable explosion, but I guess that can just come from the bridge collapsing. So interesting stuff. Thank you to Matt Baker for sending me that.
Yeah, and just like that, we just tamp down more misinformation. We fight misinformation.
We are truth tellers here. That's all we're interested in. That's all. We're just normal men. All right, let's go back out to your phone calls now and get to as many as possible. We'll start with David in Texas. Wants to talk about the eclipse from a historical perspective. Thank you for calling in, David. You're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. So I had a thought this weekend, right? And I was like, I wondered, everything else they've done is Bolshevik, to a T. And I was like, I wonder if there was an eclipse, right? A total solar eclipse that was seen in Russia, or Soviet Union, actually, back in, before, like, let's say Stalin. I just use that as an example. And believe it or not, yeah, June 12th, 1936, this was a big deal in the Soviet Union at the time. Just before Stalin ended up going through the Great Purge, 1937, 1938, with all the different programs. So this was, I guess, one of the actual historical markers for that time period. And I found it to be absolutely fascinating because up until then, Stalin had also been putting into place all of the radical policies dealing with the agriculture and hyper-urbanization. Exactly what's going on right now and has been going on for the last few years was what was going on just before the solar eclipse that was able to be seen in the Soviet Union on June 12, 1936. So I was like, why are they making such a big deal about this eclipse? I know, yeah, you know, happens every once in a while, but I think there's a lot more to it because that's also very Bolshevik. It would go right into their game plan. I thought that was just kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of this. This is crazy. This is a story from 1936 version of the New York Times. Soviet leaders to exploit eclipse. Sun's obscuration, June 19th, to test efficacy of effort to eradicate superstition. Peasants hear lecture talks and movies explain cause of phenomenon and ridicule fear it caused in 1887. An eclipse of the sun whose path is total of totality will sweep across the whole breadth of the Soviet Union on June 19th, will be put to good political use by the communist government. That is fascinating. I had not heard of that. Yeah, I mean, there's some weird headlines out now. I mean, part of it makes sense because so many people are going to be flocking to the path of the eclipse to see it, that it makes sense for people to be like, hey, go do your shopping now because there's going to be a lot of people, you know, flocking in. You know, do the same thing for the Super Bowl if it's being hosted in your city. But we've seen articles, it's like it's going to affect flights. It's going to shut down the internet. It's going to, you know, be prepared with 2 weeks of food and water for the eclipse. I mean, there's some weird headlines. Do you think it's just fear-mongering? Or, I mean, what do you think is at the heart of this, David?
Oh, man. I don't know. I believe that if you look at this like in terms of like revelations and like the scriptures, I think that not necessarily relating it directly to that, but just the fact that we're kind of in the end times. I don't know. I'm assuming that with the election coming up, they can't pull off another COVID per se, but you know, we know they're going to have to do something. And if we're already past the time where they shut everything down in, what was it, March of 2020, mm-hmm. you know, for the mail-in ballots and all that stuff. So, I mean, we're coming up on to a point where they're going to have to shut everything down. And it's only a matter of time before they do it, and how are they going to do that? I think this would probably be a perfect opportunity, and it falls in line with all of their, I mean, they love the moon. You know, they do a lot of the stuff with the eclipses, is a big deal with the, you know, and the solstice, you know, some the paganistic rituals that they do. So I'm like, what? I felt for about a year now that this eclipse was going to be something major.
Yeah, the elite really do have a sense of like a belief in this like esoteric astronomical symbols and signs. Man, it does look cool. Yeah, I wonder what will be blamed on the eclipse. I mean, I'm surprised they're not blaming the bridge collapse on climate change. You know, what could they pull off and then blame on the eclipse? Very strange. It's because we haven't sacrificed enough people, obviously. God is mad. The fact is, we still don't have much information about what happened on the Baltimore ship. But the strange thing is, and I just think about this, an exchange between Andrew Tate and Alex Jones on Twitter. Andrew Tate says, this ship was cyber attacked. Lights go off and it deliberately steers towards the bridge support. Foreign agents of the USA attack digital infrastructure. Nothing is safe. Black Swan event imminent. And Alex responds to that by basically saying, World War III has already begun. And look, whether or not this was a cyber attack, it's hard to fathom, but this is what World War III is going to look like. It is. It's going to be attacks that are indistinguishable from accidents. It's going to be random power plants burning. It's going to be very different than the way war has looked up until the recent past. This is how World War III will be fought. It will be fought with cyber attacks and hacking infrastructure and hacking vehicles and strange new world, honestly. Baltimore bridge collapse. Andrew Tate says ship was cyber attacked. White House denies. Well, there'd be no way of really knowing. Certainly a possibility. Let's go out to the phone calls now. Jerry in Plano. Let's call in about the Candace Owens interview. Go ahead, Jerry. You're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, first, just on that that ship and the bridge. We know who did it. It was Russia, obviously.
Could have been.
Yeah. I'm sure that'll be the story. But, I mean, either way, it looks intentional.
Probably Hamas.
I mean, I don't know who did it, but...
It was either climate change...
It'll probably sweep it under the rug.
Probably white supremacy, if I had to guess.
Well, I'm sure it'll get swept under the rug, just like the Ohio derailment, you know, and...
Yeah, look, clearly what it means is that the United States government must take drastic measures to take control of our supply chain to an even greater degree. I'm sure the government is at this very moment thinking of various ways to use this catastrophe to their advantage. I don't doubt that for a second.
Well, it makes me glad to live in Texas, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But, that Candace Owen interview with that rabbi, that ridiculous guy, man, his facial expressions every time, you know, when she said the word hag, it was just ridiculous. I wish she would have brought up George Soros.
You know what's so funny?
To see his reaction to that.
Like he's talking about hag being, you know, everything has to be some callback to, like, medieval tropes about witches or about Jews. And it's like none of us know or care about any of that. Nobody is using the word hag as a secret dog whistle because in the 1200s, Jews were considered witches. Like, that makes no sense. But on top of that, aren't there a lot of actual Jewish witches running around right now? Aren't they, like, all super famous? I mean, what is Lady Gaga if not a Jewish witch? Like, some of our most famous celebrities are all Jewish witches. Our politicians are married to Jewish witches. They go and they have, like, weird blood ceremonies where they're sacrificing goats and spirit cooking. I mean, like, how dare you say, it's like, well, are you mad about the actual Jewish witches that exist out there right now? The ones that are being appointed as ambassador to Ukraine? in some situations. Like, I don't know. I think that's all very funny in the reality that there are literal practicing witches that are like major celebrities in America right now. I think you're more likely to, if you just pick out a random celebrity, it's more likely they are a literal practicing witch than a Christian at this point. So, yeah, I don't know how stereotypical that is or whatever, but it is real. Yeah, here you go. Was it Abramovich? Yeah, Marina Abramovich. She's the real anti-Semite. I mean, he should be going after her, the hag, the literal Jewish witch. But that's not an issue. But saying the word hag in complete disassociation from that claim is the real issue. Yeah, literal witch running around. Is that anything else before I let you go, Jerry?
Bloodline. What's that?
Anything else before I let you go?
Yeah, I just think it might be more of a Canaanite bloodline that infiltrated Jewish population, too, that hide behind that Jewish religion and weaponize the word anti-Semitic, you know?
Of course. I mean, the dude...
I just want to...
The dude, Rabbi Shmuley, I mean, he's literally just a creepy, perverted freak. I mean, it's almost... It would actually be impressive if he, like, wasn't even Jewish and this was all just, like, an anti-Semitic character he was playing. Because he literally he's, like, making a video about selling his kosher butt plugs with his daughter, and he interrupts it to remind you that all Palestinians deserve to die. Like, literally, he'll be making a video. He'll be like, this is my box of butt plugs I sold with my daughter, and it was made in Israel. And by the way, Israel has a right to kill every Palestinian, and it's in self-defense. And if you want to get this on sale, and it's like, what is going on? This is crazy. It's legitimately crazy. And Alex has been, you know, in this interchange with him on Twitter going, I don't know if you're just like doing this on purpose because you get some sort of power when anti-Semitism rises, but, and then all of the comments underneath are like mostly Jewish people going, this man does not speak for us. This man is a freak. He has nothing to do. Jews reject this man outright. I mean, nobody likes this guy. Nobody likes this guy, but yeah, he got Candace Owens fired. So there you go. All right. Final thoughts, Jerry.
With Tim Pool. Was that supposed to be a debate or was that supposed to be an interview?
It was supposed to be just an interview. We were just supposed to be talking about stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't see the whole thing. I just saw Chase, you know, pulling up some of the clips from it and having your back. And, you know, I'm glad he did. And, you know, I never watched Tim Pool, but he did seem, you know, a bit aggressive on there, you know. And
he was
I think
mad.
You held your cool very well, probably because of the X3 you're taking. You know, I take the X2 right now, and I've noticed I've been more calm and patient and also more focused and energetic as well. I mean, it's been great.
Maybe that was
it. Nitric boost has been awesome, too. I think Tim Pool could probably benefit from taking that X3 as well.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times we, on the right side, we get into arguments with each other about how to do things properly, and there's a lot of infighting, you know, whereas the leftists and... Well, it's easy for them to come together to take things apart.
You know, the funniest part for me is that my whole argument was that the destruction of America is being done deliberately and the government could close the border at any point, and it just all of this is being done on purpose, and the federal government is not incapable of setting things right. It's a process of deliberate destruction. And I guess that's what we were arguing about. I don't even know. Like, I went there prepared to argue about certain things. I thought if we were going to talk about Israel, I was prepared to argue about Israel because I know he's pro-Israel and I'm pretty anti-Israel. I was prepared to argue about things like that or the TikTok bill. I think he's got a bad read on the TikTok bill. But then this, I just like, I don't know, he just came up with some fantasy that I was just like, all right, but that's not going to happen. So let's stick to reality and try to determine what's actually going to happen in the future so we can learn to deal with it. I wasn't even really arguing. I don't know. It was very weird to me. I was not expecting that level of aggression, and it just didn't matter to me. But it was funny that then 20 minutes later, I mentioned the thing about the climate change agenda, destroying farms, and Tim Pool literally then said, well, so all this destruction is on purpose and it's by design and they want the collapse of of the government to happen. I was just like, yes, Tim, that's what you were yelling at me about 15 minutes ago. But now you understand. Very strange. Let's go to Adam in Jacksonville. Final call. We got about a minute left. You're on the air about anti-white racism. Go ahead, Adam. Adam from Jacksonville. All right. Well, I think that's going to be all the time we have for the calls. If you all want to call back in tomorrow, we will certainly go out to calls then. I do want to remind you to go to InfoWarsStore.com. Get yourself some X3. Maybe that is why I'm so calm in a crisis. Cool under pressure. Survival Shield X3 has just almost an infinite number of positive health benefits, and it'll be different for every person because you don't know what effects that a lack of iodine or a lack of nutrition is having in your life. And only once you start taking the supplementation that you need to make up for the lack of health and nutrition in your diet will you realize, oh, I'm not just tired all the time. I don't have the right supplementation. I don't have the right nutrition. That's what's going on. That's the underlying cause. I mean, Survival Shield X3, it really can solve underlying causes that you might not even be aware of. I've said it again, I can't promote it enough. And it's still to this day. I mean, I've been taking it for like 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks at this point. I no longer take naps in the afternoon. I used to go home and take a nap for an hour after the show just to recharge because the show's so exhausting. I just don't do that anymore. So just be awake. Survival Shield X3, back in stock, on sale, InfoWarsStore.com.